Hurricane Sandy has come and gone, but its impact on the infrastructure of New York City and the lives of its people persist. For example, it had an immediate and sustained impact on New York City's healthcare system. New York University Langone Medical Center, Bellevue Hospital, and the Veterans Administration Hospital of Manhattan all had to evacuate their patients as the water surges on the East River overwhelmed these facilities. And quickly, other hospitals that received those patients became overwhelmed. And the impact of this change from Sandy has persisted into 2013. And here to talk to us today about the impact of Sandy on the healthcare system of New York City is Dr. Kimberly Glassman, a registered nurse and senior vice president of patient care services and the chief nurse officer at New York University Langone Medical Center in Manhattan. Kim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to.
And we also have Dr. Thomas Smith, who's a senior vice president and chief nurse officer, also a registered nurse, at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn. And Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleased to be here, Diana.
So thank I'm you. Going to start off a little bit. So Maimonides, NYU Langone Medical Center, was a hospital that had to be evacuated. Maimonides ended up being a receiving hospital, if you will, a hospital that took in many patients from hospitals that were affected, but also from area nursing homes and other places. So I thought we'd start a little bit with you, Kim, talking about what happened at Langone Medical Center the night of Sandy.
So we had, like many hospitals in the area, come in well before the hurricane hit and began to make our plans for sheltering in place. Some folks may remember that in 2011, during Hurricane Irene, NYU, being in flood zone A, was mandated to evacuate by the city, and at that time, end of August 2011, we evacuated over 500 patients in 36 hours and then brought half of those patients back the next day. So we were anticipating a similar scenario and had made plans to discharge as many patients as possible, but shelter in place the people who were not able to be sent home. So we had a large team of both staff and emergency management personnel here over the weekend and then into Sunday. And my job as the chief nurse was to make sure that our patients were being cared for properly, as always, and that staff had what they needed, that we were able to shelter in place not only our patients but also our staff. So my memory of that night gets blurred with all of the activities that had to go on, but we did successfully evacuate just over 300 patients in a little over 12 hours.
Some of those patients were very sick.
Some of those patients were very sick. We had about 46 patients who were in critical care units. From the youngest of patients in our NICU to adult patients in a number of our intensive care units. So we had done a number of preparations to get ready for the storm, and that is to move patients out of units in the hospital that we had already determined would not be good locations to shelter patients during a hurricane that was going to be coming from the northeast. So we moved people from upper floors on the east side of the building to lower floors that we had already determined would be appropriate and safe places to shelter patients. And we began some of these moves the day before the hurricane and then continued them into the morning. So by the time the winds and the surge hit, we were buckled down and feeling very comfortable with where we had located patients to these safe places. We had done an assessment after Hurricane Irene of where we had good backup systems, ORs and PACUs and places like that.
And what's a PACU?
So,
tell people what a PACU is.
Post-anesthesia care units, recovery rooms.
Yeah.
Right, jargon. So
right.
So we were settled in, and as I have mentioned to folks, in situations like this, when things go bad, they go bad very quickly. So we had to make decisions very quickly as a leadership team. We had to communicate those decisions very quickly without a lot of infrastructure to do that, and then make decisions about who was going to be evacuated first, second, and third across two buildings in our hospital campus. And as the chief nurse, part of my job was to decide who goes first, second, and third. So within each of the units, doctors and nurses made decisions and triaged who were the most critically ill people in those settings that they would evacuate first, second, and third. And then I was the overall organizer and coordinator of, okay, this patient on this unit will go first, then we're going to move over to this unit and take this patient, and then we'll go back and finish this off. And a lot of those decisions were made based on where did we have strong infrastructure that would support us longer, and where were we in trouble and needed to move people quickly because we had lost power and lights and our backup systems at that point. So the good news is we had areas in the campus where we never lost our backup power. And the areas where we did lose backup power were fewer. So that I think that if we had to go through a tough situation, we at least had some places that made it easy to say, okay, those folks can go later.
And Kim, tell me, did you lose any patients that night?
We did not. We did not. So we had more patients than I actually wanted in the hospital. When you relive these situations, you think, gosh, you know, if we could have discharged more people the prior day, it would have made it easier. But, of course, we didn't think we were going to be evacuating a hospital. But we got everybody out safely and fairly quickly, given the conditions of coming down many flights of stairs in the dark. We had many teams of both volunteers and staff. So doctors and nurses were taking care of the patients, but we had lots and lots of medical students and clerical staff. We had one of our unit secretaries helping to take our NICU babies out, holding flashlights and things. And so it really was an interesting parade of people surrounding the babies in the NICU who were carried down by each registered nurse.
And some of those photos were on the...
They are pretty...
We saw them all over the press.
We got some great images of nurses doing some great work during that time.
And we should just say that NICU is the neonatal intensive care unit.
It's the neonatal intensive care unit.
These are the sickest of babies.
They are.
So let me go to you, Tom. Your hospital did not have to be evacuated. You were actually a receiving hospital.
Yes.
So tell us about what you did at Maimonides. What was Maimonides like?
Well, I mean, similar to back up a little bit, similarly to what Kim recounted, we began our planning at the end of the week prior to the hurricane's arrival, and we felt, I mean, a certain amount of bravado, I think a little bit, of maybe, you know, because of the experience of a little more of the, I think it was August of 11, we had Hurricane Irene,
right.
So we had some fairly recent experience with how to prepare for this kind of a disaster, and we knew that there was a possibility, but not necessarily a likelihood, but a possibility that we'd be receiving patients. What was a little different this time is that I think there'd been some assessment by some leaders in healthcare that actually the transfer of large numbers of patients when we had Hurricane Irene was actually deleterious, had a negative effect on patient care. Just the mobilizing somebody from a long-term care facility or from an acute care facility to another hospital and so forth, and then within 24 to 48 hours having returning them again. And at that point, I don't think there was quite the expectation of the severity of the hurricane that actually occurred. So we weren't necessarily preparing for a large influx of hospitals as we began to implement our disaster preparedness plan. But by Saturday night, we actually, the storm hit Monday. On Saturday night, we began to get phone calls from nursing homes on the water in Brooklyn saying, we're going to evacuate our sickest patients on mechanical ventilators and so forth. And we actually began accepting patients Saturday night around midnight. Mm-hmm. I remember the storm hit, for those who don't know, the storm hit Monday, 6, 7 o'clock, I think was the height of the storm. So this was about 48 hours in advance. And then on Sunday, again, even though there was a expressed sort of policy that probably best not to evacuate patients, even in low-lying areas except the most acute, we began to get calls from nursing homes in particular and long-term care facilities, and we accepted those patients and added some capacity for maybe 25 or 30 patients, and we're a 750-bed hospital approximately. But then the weather report changed a bit, and we were preparing our workforce to perhaps be in the hospital for 2-3 days because of the severity of the storm as it was predicted, but we still weren't sure we were going to be receiving patients in the number that we ultimately received them. And one of our neighboring hospitals, Coney Island Hospital, which is on Coney Island, close to the water, many of your listeners, I'm sure, know of the location, had to evacuate patients on Monday. That's about a 450-bed hospital. And we accepted, I don't remember exactly how many we accepted totally from Coney Island, but we accepted over 150-plus patients from a combination of facilities, as did other hospitals in the region, accepted patients as they evacuated all of their inpatient capacity, and as a number of nursing homes did the same. So we basically, how did we respond to this? Well, we basically increased our inpatient capacity by about 15-20%, basically overnight, by opening areas of the hospital that were currently not in service, or using areas like a procedure area, like an area where you would do a day surgical procedure or an endoscopy or something like that, and we converted those into temporary spaces for patients who needed care, some of whom needed the equivalent of inpatient care, and some of whom were actually coming to the hospital because they lived in low-lying areas and their homes were flooded, mm-hmm. and they needed shelter. And they found their way to the hospital thinking this is a sort of a beacon of support for me at a time when I have no place to go. And as you know, 50-60 people actually died, many from drowning in Brooklyn and Staten Island, and I think in Queens, of course, in the Rockaways. So our planning basically was focused on finding physical capacity and organizing, and this was my primary job as the chief nurse, organizing the workforce, predominantly nurses, but also patient care, those who assist in the delivery of nursing care and others, to be available in this growing hospital over the course of that 24-hour period as hospitals and nursing homes were being evacuated. Now, many of these, I think the ongoing issue for us, we're now in the third month since Sandy. And basically, the surge on census and need for our patient care capacity has really not lessened. In fact, I would say in early December it actually increased higher than it did in the week or two immediately post Sandy. So we've been running. We're a 750-bed hospital. We've been running at about 10-15% a higher volume than a year ago. So, for example, in the month of November, just to give you a sense of the statistics here, we, on average, we had an inpatient average daily census more than 100 above what it was the prior November.
Wow.
And we certainly didn't have more staff, so we had to figure out ways to creatively manage that demand. And, of course, our primary goal is to take good care of our community and the patients who come to our door. In addition, our emergency department volume is not – in the last week, for example, right now, the end of 2012, the first week of 2013, 4 out of 7 days we had more than 400 – in fact, yesterday I think we had 450 visits to our emergency department in a 24-hour period. Mm-hmm. So you divide 450 by 24, you can see the number of patients just in an hour that are, of course, it doesn't happen quite that way, but the number of patients who potentially could be seen in an hour who require, now they don't all need hospitalization, but we've had really incredible demand as the Coney Island Hospital emergency department remains closed. And a good portion of their obstetrical patients have also transferred their care to Maimonides. In the month of November, we had 850 deliveries.
And what's your usual?
And our typical would be like 720, 730, would be over 700, but it wouldn't be anywhere in the eights.
Let me just pause here and remind listeners that you're listening to Health Styles. And I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy. We're talking with, you were just listening to, Dr. Tom Smith, Senior Vice President, Chief Nurse Officer at Maimonides Medical Center. And we're also talking with Dr. Kimberly Glassman, Senior Vice President, Patient Care Services and Chief Nurse Officer for New York University Langone Medical Center. And we're talking about the impact of Sandy on the healthcare system of New York City and the immediate impact of that hurricane, but also now I want to talk a little bit about the enduring impact. And Tom, you were just starting to get to that about how here we are over two months later, and you are still over capacity.
Right. And still in what we call this period of surge or census volume surge.
And what's happened with your emergency room?
So, you know, the emergency department, you know, continues to be very stressed from the perspective of, you know, volume that's up, you know, probably 15% over what it would be typically. I mean, we, you know, tend to be busy right after the holidays, but not quite like this. So how have we managed that? Well, we have put into place a number of systems to expedite the transfer of patients to inpatient beds, should that be appropriate. And we're right in the process right now, now that we're in the third month of this, of looking to locate other aspects of emergency care off-site, although close by our existing emergency department, because frankly, some days we really don't have physical capacity to care for, you know, yesterday afternoon, for example, and you'd have to be here to see it, but we had 180 patients in the ED at one point, and I can't tell you what our square footage is, but it was, you know, literally almost impossible to. Somebody was saying to me in jest, we don't have to worry about patients' potential to fall because they're so close to each other on their stretchers.
Fall.
There's no room to fall to.
Yeah.
So we're going to add some temporary capacity for patients who are able to walk and are ambulatory who need urgent care.
So Tom,
you know, rapid assessment kinds of things.
What's the impact of this sustained overcapacity, if you will, extra load on the staff?
Yeah, well, I think it's really, you know, we've been trying to reflect on this as small groups, you know, for example, within the emergency department, inpatient units and so forth, psychiatry, which has been, you know, consistently over capacity, been running above its normal capacity ever since Coney Island closed. Our neonatal intensive care unit, speaking of the most fragile infants being evacuated from NYU, and I think actually a couple of them might have made their way to Maimonides
at
some
did.
Point. Or maybe that was Irene. I can't remember exactly, Kim. But we've been regularly over capacity in the NICU, you know, about 15% above normal volume because of the increase in delivery. So we brought in some temporary staff, and this is an example of good collaboration between two chief nurses, is that Kim and I, you know, got on the email and the phone together, and we were able to, during this period of time that the hospital was not operating, some of the NYU Langone nurses came over to Brooklyn. I think most of them lived in Brooklyn, so that worked, and helped us care for this increased volume. But in addition to those 10 or 11 nurses who were with us for some time, we also recruited some per diem nurses, as well as worked with what we, our local nursing agents, nurse agencies that give us temporary employees. We brought in about, I'm guessing a little bit, but I would say 60 to 70 temporary, not all of them were able to work full time, but are able to help us a day or two a week in the various areas of specialty so that we could keep, I mean, I've got 50 adult medical surgical beds open today that weren't open before Sandy that have continued to be open. So I'm basically running a couple of extra units that I didn't have a staff for, so temporary employees. But I have to say, too, you know, we've also asked Maimonides nurses, who are an exceptional group and have been so responsive, and now we're into month three of this. I'll come back to that in a moment. They've worked some overtime. And what we're beginning to see, I think, some of the effects of working not 3 days a week, but maybe four or five, not 40 hours, but maybe 50 or 60 or 65, and doing it now as we move into, you know, the third month of this with maybe another couple of months to go. So we're, you know, we're rethinking some of our ways of working with our Maimonides nurses, as well as with our agency staff, and other ways of trying to give people a break and an opportunity to find the resilience they need to keep this up for another couple of months.
And Kim Glassman, NYU Langone Medical Center, is fully operational yet?
We are about two-thirds operational, and we will have remaining services up on January 14th. So I think that that will take some of the stress out of the system. I don't know that it'll help you in Brooklyn, Tom, but one of the things that we have seen as we look at this continuing impact, not only in Manhattan but sort of more broadly, is there's some interesting phenomenons that were happening. So number one, one of the things that I had realized is that everybody's OB volume was up. So prior to the hurricane, we were all tracking higher, significantly higher than normal on our budgeted deliveries, on the numbers of deliveries that we had projected. So something was going on in the city where
the closing of St. Vincent's Medical Center?
Well, I think that may have been some of it, but St. Vincent's closed long enough ago that you would think that some of that would have gotten absorbed.
Yeah.
But for all of the hospitals in Manhattan where we sent patients and subsequently staff, the biggest cry, I think, was for OB nurses. And I thought that was surprising. Emergency department, that wouldn't surprise me because Bellevue is a significant emergency presence in the city. And
that's still closed, right?
Well, they have
urgent care or something.
They've opened some urgent care, and they are starting to take some ambulances just to be able to triage people and then send them to a hospital for those people who need to be admitted. So they got some services up pretty quickly, but I think that the loss of their ED as well as ours made a big, big impact in the city. And, of course, Tom, as you've pointed out, during a disaster, whether it's a natural disaster or some other type of local disaster, people in the neighborhood come to the hospital because that's their point of refuge.
Exactly.
So within Manhattan, people in our local neighborhood who have come to the hospital during all of the blackouts that we've had in the city and other types of stressors that have happened in the city where people have not had power or whatever, the hospital is always where they come. But
and you were affected by the blackout, too, for, a week or something?
And for those kinds of things, though, we're not open, so then where do people go?
Right. And unfortunately, we are out of time. I just want to summarize that you all did such a service during Sandy, but I don't think people realize the extent to which people who are working in hospitals in New York City right now are continuing to go above and beyond to try to meet the need from the closures of hospitals that that still aren't open. And so I want to commend you both for the work that you're doing. I know that it's for anybody who knows anybody in healthcare these days, anybody working in hospitals in particular, you might want to ask them how they're doing, because during Sandy it was, you know, sort of that immediate heroism and everyday heroes, if you will. And as this persists, it really, I think, becomes exhausting for many people. Yeah. So kudos to both of you. I want to thank Dr. Kimberly Glassman, Senior Vice President for Patient Care Services and Chief Nurse Officer at Maimonides Medical Center. Kim, thanks so much for being with us on Health Styles today and sharing your story.
Thank you, Diana. It was great to be here.
And Dr. Thomas Smith, a Senior Vice President, Chief Nurse Officer for Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn. Thanks so much, Tom. Very good work.
Oh, thank you, Diana.
And
my pleasure.
You've been listening to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in.